They're all driving in a car 100 miles an hour, and they're arguing who's going to drive the car, who's got more leverage, who's got more gusto. Now, we know the American military, strongest military in the world, and as President Trump is saying, we're going to, you know, bomb them into the Stone Age. The Iranians are saying, ah, you know what? We control the Straits of Hormuz. You don't have missiles forever. We've been under sanctions for 20 years already, and the ships still keep going through. But when the car hits the wall at 100 miles an hour, Steve, it's the global economy that goes poof, fossil fuels for transportation and other purposes. And okay, it's not going to happen in a day, but certainly if you had a 15-year plan, that's going to get accelerated. This is extremely bullish for anything that creates, transfers, utilizes, and now stores electrical energy. But now, when you look at that structure with a solar roof, a battery, an electric car, and you're independent, and you totally disintermediate incumbent energy, that is the new greatest prize.
It's the new wheel.
I can't underline that enough. And that's a good way, I think, to finish up here today, where if that doesn't fortify why you need to be hyper-focused on electrification, if the way we create, transfer, utilize, and store electrical energy. Because just like China is now 30% final energy usage, used to be 20, 10 years ago, rest of the world's 22%, you're going to see all the economies now go to 40, 50% of final energy usage as electrification.
Hey everyone, it's me, just Steve Yang here with Natural Resource Stocks. Today I'm joined by Gianni Kovacevich. I hope I said that right. Author and investor, leading voice on energy, metals, natural resources. Gianni, can you correct me on your last name pronunciation? It's great to have you here.
You said it pretty good, Kovacevich, but pretty good.
Kovacevich, awesome. Well, Gianni, we got a lot going on in the world. You know, first of all, let's talk about Iran. But, you know, I've heard people connect recent events like, you know, in places like Venezuela, Greenland, and now Iran to energy and resources. What's your take on that? What's your take on what's going on and how is the energy transition, you know, reshaping the geopolitical landscape here?
Well, I'm sure everyone's watching the news and they've heard all the different opinions. And effectively, I have a background in electrical studies, Steve. And when you pop a machine, electrically speaking, and the smoke comes out of it.
Yeah.
You can't put the smoke back in. It's popped. And right now, the way I look at it, it's all the characters in this quagmire they're all driving in a car 100 miles an hour, and they're arguing who's going to drive the car, who's got more leverage, who's got more gusto. Now, we know the American military, strongest military in the world, and as President Trump is saying, we're going to, you know, bomb them into the Stone Age. The Iranians are saying, ah, you know what? We control the Straits of Hormuz. You don't have missiles forever. We've been under sanctions for 20 years already, and the ships still keep going through. But when the car hits the wall at 100 miles an hour, Steve, it's the global economy that goes poof, and you put the smoke back in the machine. So this is a very tricky month. So we know as we're recording it right now, there's a deadline today too. Hopefully that can gets kicked down the road. But boy, if this thing doesn't get sort of some sort of clarity in the next 2 or 3 weeks, it's going to be the smoke going out of the machine. So we'll see what happens there.
So how does this, I mean, we got right now it's 9:20 a.m. Eastern time. What's the deadline again? Was it 8 o'clock? Today or something?
Today, Tuesday, as we're recording. I'm not sure when this goes live.
Yeah, so how does this turn out? I mean, who's got more leverage here?
A political scientist, I am not. But let's look at this from the biggest importer of every commodity in the world, which is China. What are they thinking? Now, we already know that what they were talking 10 years ago about electrifying transport, and everyone thought, oh, this is going to take forever. Well, they crossed the crucible like over a year ago. More than 50% of the machines for transportation are now electric in China. They want to control their own future. They are basically all solutions. They become experts in basically every category. Everyone knows that already. What this has done, and showing this the mega choke point of all choke points, the Strait of Hormuz, is that economies like China, South Korea, Japan, et al., they are now going to accelerate whatever they were thinking about going away as fast as they can from fossil fuels for transportation and other purposes. And okay, it's not going to happen in a day, but certainly if you had a 15-year plan, that's going to get accelerated. This is extremely bullish for anything that creates, transfers, utilizes, and now stores electrical energy. Things like copper, things like lithium, things like battery technology, and all the things that feed into it. Those are the things that you want to be hyper-focused on. You want to become an expert in. Now, I follow this stuff like Harlequin Romance. I followed energy for 30 years. I do have a background in electrical studies. I wrote a book in 2016 titled My Electrician Drives a Porsche, which has nothing to do with fast cars. It has everything to do with understanding the magnificence of electrification and that biggest growth economy in the world, which has been the giant dragon, China. And they work together. So this is where I'm focusing on. And I guess the situation we have now is if the car hits the wall at 100 miles an hour, everything's going to be red. You know, there Dennis Garvin used to have a famous saying. He used to say it this way when, on those days, you know, once every 20 years, when it's just an epically bad macroeconomic situation. When they raid the house of ill repute, they arrest everyone, including the piano player. It all goes down. Gold, silver, everything's going to go down. You could see a really turbulent 2 or 3 days, but eventually, the market does become a weighing machine, as Ben Graham used to tell us in his books. You know, you want to be in the things that if you drop it on your foot, it hurts. Things like gold, things like silver, as people are weaning away from the US dollar, and those things that enable electrification. This is as we come out of the ashes of what could be a very terrible couple of days in the stock market if something happens here. Was I say the car hitting the wall at 100 miles an hour?
Gianni, so we don't know how things are going to turn out with a looming deadline here. We can only guess, and you know we do have doomsday projection possibilities sort of thing. But you mentioned a 15-year plan acceleration sort of thing. You seem to have connected that with the Strait of Hormuz, the blockage there. Is that primarily the driver? And does the acceleration take place regardless of how today plays out?
It's accelerated. I would say that. You know, people can have their own opinions there, but you know, Steve, I'm a speculator. I'm not an investor. And people will tell you that investors, it requires patience. It's also someone will tell you that an investor is all the great investors. I'm talking the Stanley, the Druckenmeyers, the you know, people like that, Ray Dalio. They're really philosophers. Look how they describe very complicated situations, and they're able to look through the noise and find the music in every situation. You know, I am a speculator, and a speculator, some people will tell you a speculator is a gambler. I'm not a gambler. I use good evidence, I use good science, and I speculate on the outcome. You know, and I'm not in the pool. I'm not fishing in the junior stock market with juniors to fish out coins. I'm fishing for bills, big bills. And so I will continue to speculate. If I like a name, like a pair of shoes, if a pair of shoes are $100 and because something terrible happens in the world, no one bought shoes and they go to $50 or $30, I buy more shoes. Now, because we're going through nervous times, I'm always going to be sitting on a good position of cash. If something terrible was to happen, I'm able to buy more of the things that I'm speculating in. And what am I speculating in? The outcome. The outcome. So for me, even though I recognize the car can hit the wall at 100 miles an hour, if I'm looking at a gold or copper play right now or a natural gas play, and they're at the point where they start drilling, good people, I'm looking for the next 3 to 6 months. If they have a bonanza type discovery, Steve, that stock is going from the bottom left to the upper right of your screen. That's just the way these things work. And because the market is more mature, the producers have all ran up a lot. The developers have ran up a lot. The company I started is up 30, 40x from the time when I started it. So, you know, because the developers have moved. But now, how do I make a 10-bagger in this market? It's going to be done with discovery, the drill bit. And so I have a little portfolio, and I can suggest to people, you know, a little bit of gold, a little bit of copper, a little bit of lithium, on how you could speculate into drill plays for the rest of the year 2026.
Yeah, Gianni, you brought that up. Let's do it. I mean, that's what our investors are, our listeners are interested in. I'd love to get your reasoning behind, you know, kind of where you're going in your speculation, and love some companies if you'd be willing to share.
Sure. You hear any background noise there?
I'm good. I can hear you fine.
There's no background noise? That guy's drilling something in the backyard. You're able to add this too, right? A little bit, right?
I hear
Don't
you.
Worry
great.
About it. Okay. So let's look at it this way. So I've already talked about electrification is going to be the sort of the big trend of the next 5 years. It already was. This is just going to be accelerated, in my opinion. So lithium leads the charge. Lithium is something that's already grown. The CAGR growth rate's like 20, 30%. There's no major commodity that's growing at that level. And so you do not have to lose any sleep at night that demand for lithium is growing 20, 30%. Now, the market has surprised everyone. 2 years ago, when the price collapsed, everyone thought, oh man, we've got an oversupply. It's gonna take 5 years to get there. But the market growing at 30%, Steve, the oversupply is basically already taken care of. And the people that consume the most lithium, people like CATL and BYD and these battery companies, they're telling the market that they're going to see 30% growth in lithium this year. So if the market's at 1.5 million tons and now growing by 30%, we're going to be closer to 2 million tons this year. So a typical project is 20,000 tons, you know, we're not going to be able to make it up unless we have some sort of breakthrough. So I'm speculating in direct lithium extraction, DLE. And the company that I started is called Lithium Bank, LBNK, Alberta, doing a feasibility study this year. And guess who's doing it? Schlumberger, the world's largest oil and gas service provider, who are operating the world's largest DLE pilot plant. This is something that's going to culminate this year. The results should be done by maybe December, January, something like that. And I think that that's a stock that you could see, just like all the other lithium shares, when they had their feasibility study, they have a parabolic move. You know, small share count, low market cap, and a good potential for 5 or 10x there, in my opinion. The second part of the battery and battery technology is something people need to know or follow, is the P. So lithium iron phosphate batteries, LFP, the P. Where's the P going to come from? This is, I cannot underline enough how important it is to follow that, because the phosphate typically is coming at the margin from sedimentary type deposits. But if you can get a volcanic or a igneous type of deposit, all of that phosphate can be converted into purified phosphoric acid. Very few of those deposits. So there's a company in Quebec called First Phosphate. It's partnered with the world's largest company making PPA, a Belgian company called Prayon, where you look at their website, they've got their partnerships there. They're got a big grant, $17 million from the Quebec government. They just did a big drill program. So they too are going to complete a feasibility study this year. So the symbol's PHOS. And in my opinion, all of the PPA from igneous type deposits that can be produced is going to be taken up by the market, because LFP is where the battery action is, lithium iron phosphate. So I'm speculating, and I continue to probably buy more of this company, First Phosphate, PHOS, because of those fundamentals. So you got the lithium, but not lithium per se, not hard rock mining, not the Salars of South America. It's direct lithium extraction. And I want to be in a extraction province like Alberta, a company, Lithium Bank, working with the world's largest oil and gas service provider, Schlumberger. And then for the P, First Phosphate, PHOS. Established companies, no longer drill plays, but they've still got the 10-bagger potential because of this feasibility event that will take place in the year 2026. So that's lithium, that's phosphate. I'd like to also talk about natural gas. So within the realm of the Straits of Hormuz, we already had the problems between Russia and Ukraine, and basically Europe has just been battered. The natural gas price is 4 times higher at times in Europe, like right now, 4x higher. So I'm speculating in a Hungarian natural gas play. It's called Cancambrian. They're going to be doing, goal is to do three wells this year in Hungary with a low royalty. and the natural gas rates are, four times higher than they are in the United States, and it's in a past-producing area, so the infrastructure is already there. They're hundreds of meters away from existing pipeline. So when something like that, if they're to be successful, and as you should know, with these days, with the 3D seismic and the fracs, and the success rate is just so high when the evidence is all pointing there. So it's really about payability, permeability, and with each well. If they can be greater than 2 BCF, and the models are showing 5 to 8, and a well field that can grow to 60 to 80, this is a like a I call it a billion, but a multi-billion dollar asset as it's drilled out. So they're going to partner with a big company. That's the plan. Do the first three wells with them and create a 50-50 partnership. And from then on, it becomes 50-50 pay to play. $15, $16 million to drill a well. But they also announced a few weeks ago that they have a shallow play within their tenement. So now we're talking about $4 or $5 million wells rather than $15, $16 million wells for the deeper play, which is still where the action's going to be. Exciting company, trading around 50 cents. So if as this plays out, you have to look at the risk and reward, but as I told you, I'm speculating on the outcome, and that's something that'll take place once again through the year 2026. So if this car hits the wall at 100 miles an hour, all I would do is buy more of these companies. You're getting at a cheaper deal because the outcome won't change. No matter what happens with Russia, Ukraine, no matter what happens with the Straits of Hormuz, they are going to get this work done. For the most part, they're all financed, and I'm looking for those outcomes. So we got lithium, phosphate, natural gas. We haven't talked about copper yet. We haven't talked about gold. I don't know. What are your thoughts on copper these days, Steve?
I want to learn from you. I mean, copper, I'm always waiting for the copper thing to turn and go parabolic. My understanding is that there's been a huge copper shortage. Just curious as to what the timeline is going to be, but I like copper.
Well, let me people don't have a, if you, we really want to be romanced with copper. I did the keynote at CESCO, which is the world's biggest gathering of copper executives. Thousands of people are there, and I was the keynote for the copper dinner in 2017. So if you want to see a 30-minute keynote type presentation 10 years ago and see what came true of what I was talking about, CESCO. My name, Johnny Kowachwitz, CESCO, spelled CESCO. I also did a talk with Dennis Gartman, Energy Presented Two Ways in 2018. So if you look up Copper Bank, my name, Dennis Gartman with YouTube, you'll find that. It's a 1 hour presentation. Dennis Gartman, very colorful, very interesting presenter. He talks about energy over 30 minutes, and then I do a 30-minute overview. People can go to YouTube and look at those talks later if you want to see more of a romance on copper. But copper is a commodity where it's simply the greener and cleaner we create and utilize energy, the more that is demanded of copper. And final energy usage, historically, only 20% was electrification, right? And that as energy grew around the world, more people consuming more things, fossil fuels 80%, electrification 20%. But China in the last 10 years has got to 30%. So 30% final energy usage in China is electrification, going to 50%. That effectively is reinventing the wheel, Steve. And the rest of the world is now falling. The rest of the world's about 22%. And as I was saying before, Straits of Hormuz acceleration, you're going to see countries like Japan, Korea get to 30%, I would say by 2030, 32, something like that. And they're all going to, and it's because the local garbage truck, the local milk truck, all the delivery vehicles, people, passenger vehicles are going to be going away just like China and becoming electrified. And if you have a battery, a very simple solar panel, you have disintermediated the entire incumbent energy system. And that's what China's doing. They do it at the factory level, of course. They have wind, they have solar, and they augment it with natural gas for peaker power. And coal, if they need to. Nuclear, they're not the best for peaker power because they take too long to turn up and down. Natural gas is instantaneous, and you use it when you need it, which is why China, once again, is doing all, basically all available sources and becoming experts at all of them. So copper is going to be, the demand is going to be growing from the bottom left to the upper right of your screen. CAGR growth rate, 3%, 4%. There are going to be times we aren't even going to have enough copper. We're simply going to have to substitute aluminum because all the copper will be taken. Where we need to, as Robert Friedman will tell you, that all the copper that has been mined and utilized, we roughly need to duplicate that, but in the next 20 years. Very difficult. And prices are going to have to be higher, but it's permitting and all the issues everyone already knows. Very difficult. So I built a company called Copper Bank. It turned into a company called Faraday. It's went from 10 cents to $5. I have nothing to do with the company anymore. I'm not in management, but it's been a tremendous success for me and gave me a lot of comfort, And now I'm looking for ways to speculate in a drill play for copper. So what do I like? I don't want to be in a country where my children can't work. So that's my risk tolerance. I want to be in a country where if it's discovered, at least it's plausible that there's a bigger company that's going to come and take a look or buy it out. And more importantly, the outcome. If I speculate on the outcome, Steve, with good people, good science, good results, I can't control what's going to happen. If they miss, okay, the money goes to money heaven. I get that. But if they hit, you have a 10 or 20 bagger.
And bagger.
There's a little company now that just got started. I've been following it. It's trading around 20, 30 cents, had a bit of a move up, went to $1.30 from 20 cents. It came down.
Okay.
They raised 10 million bucks at 75 cents. I participated. And now then the stock fell down. It did one of these life offerings and had a warrant. So it went to 50 cents, bought
Okay.
more. And now people can buy it lower than the offer price. It's called Super Copper, symbols CUPR. Projects in Chile near Copiapó, so roughly in the middle of Chile, at a much lower elevation than some of the other stuff that's been discovered. We're talking 1,500 meters. So it's IOCG, iron ore, copper oxide, gold. I love copper when it's got a gold or silver kicker. And these guys are permitted. They're going to start drilling. So you're able to buy the company at a discount to the recent financing. And you don't have to wait forever. You're going to get action here in the next 2, 3, 4 months. And once again, no matter if the car hits the wall at 100
That
miles an
that's
hour.
Zachary Dolesky's company.
Yeah,
No.
exactly. Yeah.
The
So I don't know if you know the guy.
Zachary Dolesky, right?
Yes,
Yeah,
exactly.
I had him on the show. I'm
Oh, okay.
like,
There you
I
go.
know this guy.
Okay, so that's interesting. So there you go. So you do what you want with the information, I think. And it's an interesting speculation. So it's a decent share count. They got lots of cash now. They're going to be able to accomplish what they need accomplished. And I see some of the guys on the advisory board. So for me, 90% of my due diligence is already done. When I see a collection of really good technical people, they're not there to look like idiots. They're there because they see something. So already, who am I to go, outsmart some of them? These are very, very technical, very competent people. And Zach's a younger guy, so I've invited him to come to Croatia this summer and to just to get to know him a bit better and maybe get myself deeper involved in the story. But yeah, I think it's a good speculation for copper. And there's another copper story that people should know about. If you like silver, if you're a silver bug, a company that's going to go public here in the next few weeks. It's called Luminum Metals, and it's in Poland, and it's got the biggest silver deposit in the world, 1.5 billion ounces of silver. But it's a copper play. It's near the Kupferschiefer, which is owned by KGHM, one of the biggest copper mines in the world. It's run by Ross Beaty. 15 years they've been running it privately. They funded it. They put like $200 million into this thing. It's going to come out of the gate with around a $1 billion market cap, but it's got one of the largest copper resources in the world, and the kicker is a 1.5 billion ounces of silver. It's going to go public. I think this is something that Ross typically has sold all his copper companies. I would imagine that's going to be what's going to happen here. So you can go to their website, luminametals.pl. I don't know if they got like an investor zone yet, but in the next 2, 3, 4 weeks, you should see that thing go public. And it's going to be a big story. You heard it now, but when it's live, I think you're going to really hear about it. And this is going to be, in my view, a multi-billion-dollar valuation eventually. And this will be bought by a big company. And by the way, in Poland, they have got that big smelting complex. Do you know they import concentrate from outside Poland because they have excess capacity? Like, what a natural fit. It's within tens of kilometers away. So you put it all together. A pedigree with a guy like Ross, one of the biggest deposits of copper and of silver, independent of each other. And because of the silver byproduct, you get something where the cash costs are very low. So the one thing they got to do is get down. It's a deeper deposit. So the 3 years or so that it takes to get down, that's what's going to impact the MPV. But as that exercise starts happening, as you get closer to payday, there are going to be those five or six large copper companies in the world. You cannot find reserves like this, resources like this. The only way they can grow now, Steve, the big ones, Rio Tinto, BHP, Glencore,
Yeah.
they have to buy them.
His
And you
buddy's
know,
out.
unfortunately, we spent lots of money exploring for copper, lots of will, just not much success. So something like this, they've had tremendous success. I think they're going to want it. They're going to be on their shopping cart, in my opinion.
So like most silver companies, you don't have, like you mentioned silver company being having silver as the kicker. And that seems to be the case with most silver companies is it's hard to find companies that are just silver. Do you
Right.
know any big silver plays where the mine is primarily silver that you like?
Well, the way I speculated with First Majestic, I know Keith Neumeyer a very long time. He's a hard worker. And, if you look at the 20-year graph of First Majestic, whenever it gets to $7 or $8, just buy it. It's going to bounce. It got there, went to $40, So for me, the way I play silver is with First Majestic. Now, of course, it's, much higher. And I would say silver is something that's a little bit going through, like gold, a little bit rebalancing. So your conventional Swiss portfolio, I've been going to Zurich for 20 years, they were always 5 or 10% in gold. Some guys got to 15%. Well, Steve, when the gold price triples, you can't have a portfolio sitting on 40% of its value in gold. So rebalancing, it's happening right now. And with silver, a little bit of that as well, but you have to look at the who bought the silver, the where, how did they buy it? There are a lot of tourists in the gold and silver trade right now. And you go down and buy $10,000 worth of silver coins or silver bars. These people do it on instruments. For every unit you buy, they can trade 10 or 20 units. So they can move a lot more. So that too is, it spells one word. It's going to be volatility. You're going to continue to see volatility there because there are these tourists involved. So it's going to be whipped up and whipped down. And you should expect that. If you can't handle that kind of volatility, don't trade it. I guess you could just buy those bars and just put it somewhere under your bed or somewhere safer than that, and just don't worry about it. I'm not going to play that game. I still my heart beats for right now where we are because the my developers, producers have all went up. I don't think you got a three or four bagger anymore in this stuff. You got to go to exploration, but exploration's risky. You're not going to put a lot of your portfolio in any one name or any one speculation. You're going to do 1, 2, 3, 4%, something like that. And follow the science and follow people, and hopefully they're able to drill in the next 2, 3, 4 months. You don't want to be stuck in some play that, they've been waiting for 2 years to drill something and still can't drill it. That's only going to be expanded and expanded. So I
So
look at some of the stories that we just talked about.
Gianni, you mentioned Poland. Curious as to what you know about Poland in terms of jurisdiction, friendliness to mining, and we talk about exploration companies. How do you assess? You mentioned, the people that do their homework and are involved. That's a big thing. What else do you look at that determines that they is a no-brainer? You have to look at it. It has to check all the boxes. Do you have a checklist for us to be asking questions?
Well, Poland has a mining culture. So KGHM is a very large company. And it also, traditionally, when the government changes in Poland, they would typically change the management of the KGHM company. So there was one particular 5-year run that I guess wasn't the best. Other than that, it's been fantastic. Right now, Poland really wants to be augmenting those areas. Where, and this is electrification, this is independence, this is all the things that everyone's already talked about, where you're not relying on foreign sources of copper or foreign sources of anything. They have these deposits, they want them developed. And I guess it's one of the reasons it's taken Ross so long to list the company. And Poland's now a $1 trillion economy. It's one of the strongest economies in Europe. It's been certainly one of the best growers. It's a big economy, $1 trillion. And I guess they are spending 5% of that on GDP now on defense. So, and that's just for anyone, I think it's a very unproductive way to allocate capital to at that level. But you know, that's just where we are in the world. Everyone has now boosted their defense budgets and, you know, typically doing it with debt. So,
Money we don't have.
yes.
Speaking of money we don't have, we've seen gold go up significantly. You'd mentioned gold just previously. Do you have any gold plays that you like? And do you believe in gold, or do you feel like gold has been maxed out at this point?
No, gold's going higher. And it's effectively, as everyone already knows, it's a flight from the US dollar. So we $39 trillion of debt and growing. And so I guess it's some people, I'm gonna plagiarize, paraphrasing Jeffrey Gundlach, who I think is very good at explaining these things, but it's the you have $39 trillion in debt. But it's the that primary balance has to start going down because it becomes untenable. And it's also the trajectory of how often another trillion is added now. It's breathtaking. And with a market-driven sort of where the rates are going to be going higher because for other factors, not lower. I think now that's almost clear. And Jeffrey Gundlach also talks about the two-year treasury, which leads rates. So it's telling you that, and if you follow that 40 years, it's actually very accurate. I saw some of the graphs he was showing. Rates are probably going to be going higher. So this debt that the trajectory is just, there's only two ways to take care of this, Steve. They have to raise taxes or lower spending. And they're not doing either. So I just, as this gets to a point where it gets untenable, where even someone that was really bad at ninth grade math is going to say, hey, this is not tenable anymore. Where do you go? And
That's how
that is
bad it
why,
is. That's how bad it is.
that is why, that's the primary driver of why gold is going to continue to climb. People are buying it. They're across the board, central bankers, big investors, small investors. And I would say, 2026 is a rebalancing year. But then it's going to keep going. And to see something like a $10,000 gold price, I don't think that's crazy. I think, it's well within the realm of how much money is out there, the value of things. And with that, silver's going to follow it. And I think a 50-to-1 ratio on silver gold is not unreasonable. So to see, the day that gold is $10,000 and you have a golden tiger or dragon ripping apart Wall Street, on that same day, you're going to see silver at $150 or $200, And companies, the more mature companies will follow that trend. But when that stabilizes as well, once we get through this 2026 rebalancing year, I will then maybe allocate more capital as I see some of these developers bifurcate or come off a little bit. And then always doing that on a doomsday scenario. So if as I say, the car hits the wall at 100 miles an hour and everything, they raid the house of ill repute. There may be some favorites again, even things I've owned or traded, they're going to be on sale, and I'll be a buyer of those things on that day.
You mentioned Keith Neumeyer and First Majestic. Keith got me this coin, this Las Vegas coin, First Majestic coin. I really admire Keith and his vision. He measures his success for his work by how many jobs he creates, is what he said. But he's got a great mind. I believe he also started a copper company for First Majestic did. But if you can tell me about
He,
kind of.
as far as I understand, it's not, that's actually a very significant one. He was the first Quantum, which became a huge company. So, your hat has to go off to a guy like that. He is a very hard worker. You're absolutely correct.
So I like Heath. I like First Majestic. You're right in the people. We invest in the people. But are there other gold and silver plays that you like?
There are, but I think right now I'm more focused on seeing how aluminum metals comes out of the gate and how it trades. I if it's people have owned it for 14, 15 years privately, so I don't imagine there's going to be too much sell off, but that would be something I would certainly be a buyer of. They're raising like $200 million, right? So to IPO, I don't know quite the terms yet, but that's I'm going to be sticking with more of those. The names I know because the Motley Fools, those investors, they always said invest in the things you know and love. And I can be romanced into another idea. It's absolutely like Zach at Super Copper. I bought that and I could see myself buying more of that, particularly as I told him already with success. You know, that's going to
Yeah.
be a story I want to follow. But gold less so. I think I'm still more of an electrification metals guy. Copper, lithium, phosphate, PPA. I'm fascinated by it. A guy you may want to have on your show is John Passalacqua. He runs First Phosphate, and he'll talk. You know, the entire thing will be about the fundamentals, not his company. He'll really nail it down for you over 30, 40 minutes, and you're going to become. This is not like manganese or nickel or cobalt that gets substituted out of the batteries. No, PPA, all that can be produced is going to be taken up by the market, all of it. Because these guys don't want to fool around with this sedimentary type phosphate deposits. So when some
Yeah.
of these gems, this igneous type deposit comes around, and it's not in a place like Russia, it's a place like Quebec near Tidewater, supported by the government, where they're putting
Yeah.
tens of millions of dollars to make this thing go, you know. I mean, that's where my heart beats, you know, and they've not taken off like some of these other niche metals. You know, lithium is still, even though the biggest companies in the world are saying DLE is the future, talking about Rio Tinto, Chevron, Exxon, Schlumberger, Koch Industries, Shell, you know, I'm not going to second guess oil and gas. I'm not even worried about what junior mining investors say. I'm speculating in DLE. Lithium and Lithium Bank, you know, and I think that's still a core holding for me. I'm a very large shareholder of the company. And of course, everything I talked about today, I own. So I'm very conflicted. Everyone should be clear anytime you talk in stocks that you own them. Let's be clear about that. So I'm very happy if people buy the things after that I own, right? So, but in any case, yeah, so I think gold, I can be romanced into it, but I'm more looking, I like gold when it comes with copper. So the IOCG type story. I like silver when it comes with copper, aluminum metals, and I'm more of an electric metals because they haven't had 10 baggers yet. There's not a 10 bagger. The market is inefficient. And the Don Cox would have a great saying. He says, never invest in the story on page one. That's the efficient market. Invest in the story on page 16. That's headed to page one. And that is what First
Yeah.
Phosphate is, PPA. That's what DLE and lithium in a jurisdiction like Alberta are. Eventually they become page one stories, but then they're no longer, you know, they've moved 10 times higher, or they become a very more mature stock, in my opinion. That's how I speculated before. And the facts haven't changed. You know, when they change, I'll admit it.
Yeah.
But right now the setup is there. And with these companies are doing their feasibility study this year, I can wait 8 months for something like a 5 or 10 bagger. I can do that. I got the patience for that. So let's see what happens.
And with the feasibility study, once that hits, depending on results, I mean, it can go pretty parabolic there, right? Just the
Yes,
getting on the
correct.
right side of the Lassonde curve, just right before the potential, you're going to see a huge kick in some of these guys is what you're expecting. Is that correct?
Correct. Well, look at historically, Standard Lithium goes from $1 to $12 once they put their feasibility out, and it's still at $5. You know, so, or even more at 7 Canadian, but I follow US dollars. So the feasibility studies are not quite like mining, where when mining, you need to know every bench, all the metallurgy, all the core, you know, the recoveries. This is a reservoir. You know, you can pretty much figure out roughly the economics without a lot of expense. And I know that Lithium Bank has got a lot of help from the Alberta government. I think we're $4 million towards the feasibility study. And as far as I know, it's going to be like maybe a $7 or $8 million exercise only, not like a copper mine where you spend $50 million and a feasibility study takes 3 years. They're done quicker, and they're way more efficient because it's just a big reservoir. Pump the water, goes through a process to bump up the grade, goes through another process, and you have a lithium product that's going to go into a battery of the future. And so it's just about having it has to go out very consistent, constantly. And they're all a little bit different, these reservoirs, the impurities. They're not cookie cutter. They all have a little bit of nuance to them. And so for that reason, I think you can already have a rough understanding that I'm not going to be surprised. So what are they looking for? Lithium Bank is looking for something that would put out 10,000 tons, but done in sister silos. So if you want to double it, And the CapEx should be, they're looking for something. Can they do it for $500 million for each 10,000 tons? So then you do 20,000 tons for around a billion. Well, Standard Lithium's feasibility study was for 22,000 tons and it's 1.45 billion CapEx. So this is something considerably lower. That, at least that's the expectation. That's what we're looking for. That's where they can do the work, you know? And then the operating cost, they want to be in the lowest 25% quartile, the lowest quartile in operating costs. So you've got a project that should be very attractive CapEx-wise and very attractive on the OpEx. Now, if Schlumberger can put out a document like that, boy, this thing's going to be a screamer. I think this thing is just, only has, I think, less than 70 million shares out, Steve. So if Standard Lithium has a market cap of 1.3, 1.4 billion Canadian, a billion US,
yeah.
Lithium Bank's trading at 75 cents, 70 million shares. So at $5, $350 million market cap is not fantastical. You know, and by the way, 3 years ago it was $2 when it was listed.
Yeah.
It was a far, far less mature story. You know, well, I got a lot more information now. The team is there, and we're talking 8 or 9 months away from the result. So, and with First Phosphate as well, I think First Phosphate just get bought out. Now you can interview John Pasolacqua as you want. He can give you his own opinion, but I think that's going to be someone.
I'm
going to
reach out to John
out.
For sure.
You know,
Gianni, I want to make a qualification for a disclaimer for the audience here. So I am not giving investment advice here. Some of these companies I have traded in and out in, but please do your due diligence. In terms of, I do want to ask you though, if we want to zoom out a little bit, we started off by talking about Venezuela, Greenland, and what's happening in the Hormuz. And we talked about how this is just accelerating the transition from fossil fuel to green energy. I want to ask you, like, how, I mean, you mentioned 2030 as a possible, how quickly is this transition going to take place? My understanding previously has been this transition can take a lot longer than people think. If you can kind of give us the timeline of why you think maybe that most people have the timeline wrong.
No, it depends where you are, what jurisdiction. And the United States has obviously been a laggard with electric vehicle take up. There's a myriad of reasons for that. It's the other guys, not Tesla, but the epic fail in charging, the ridiculous electric vehicles that were offered to people, the limited range with bad charging. And America has big distances. So that was never going to be the driver. It's going to be economies like Japan, Korea, China, where big populations. And Japan's a relatively small country size-wise, same with South Korea with a big population, and they have no fossil fuels. Japan imports everything, right? China is an importer, but weaning going less, they are a producer of petroleum products, but they can get to a point where they can be self-sufficient, you know, maybe in about 10 years, something like that. So you look at where the action is. The automobile market, light vehicles, is 90 million units, Steve. China is about 30 million. America, 16, 17 million. You know? So why is China important? Because it's bigger as a car market than United States, Japan, Mexico, Germany, South Korea combined. So when they go, and they're already 50%, more than 50% of the sales now are electric vehicles. And this is the primary reason that all the European to a lesser extent, the American automotive companies are having such a problem. They invested big in China for the old technology. They were told you had to have a 50-50 partnership. But if you're all electric, it could be 100% owned. Tesla was the only one that did it. And so this big investment they made, so it was the biggest market for Mercedes, BMW, Volkswagen, Ford, or first or second biggest market for General Motors, not the United States, it was China. And so now, if you were a subsidiary of Volkswagen, remember 30 million automobiles, light automobiles in China. If you were making 30 million mufflers 12 years ago, you're now making 11 or 12 million and falling. The factory has to get retooled. It's over. It was never about, and that's what they did. They tried to take the old chassis and make an electric vehicle out of it, where they had to start over. They had to completely, and they couldn't do that because the German automotive manufacturers are run by unions. 50% of the board of directors is represented by the union. And so when these, when the companies went to their shareholders and says, I'm talking 10 years ago, are we going to retool? Are you crazy? You know how much that's going to cost? No. And then the union said, are you crazy? There's 50% fewer man hours in making an electric vehicle. We want no part of this nonsense. And they don't sell their cars. You know that the cars are sold through a global network of automotive dealerships. And they went to them and said, do you want to sell electric cars? He says, are you crazy? There's no service in an electric car. And as you know, we don't make money selling cars. We make money servicing cars. There's no changing the brakes. There's no oil changes. They never see you again. You can swap out an electric motor if there's a problem. Not that there is. They say you could drive a million miles on an electric motor. They're so strong. But you swap it out in 1 hour. They'll just give you a loaner motor. That's it. They never see you again. And they're never in the high rent district. They don't like, you know, the American dealerships were all made on the most expensive corner, big glass, big property. Not the electric car companies. They ship the car to you and they're in some middle of nowhere place. So the whole thing was done stupidly, and they were all kind of clumsily connected. And the Chinese, they didn't care. They bypassed it. Just like the Indians never got a landline. They went right to the cell phone. The Chinese phone companies became car companies, and they reinvented the wheel. That's it. And as I said before, when you disintermediate completely the incumbent energy system, where you have a structure with a solar roof and other things, but I'm trying to be colorful here, and a battery, you're independent. You need petroleum products for the vulcanized rubber and stuff like that. Of course, you need it for that, but not burning it every day. And there was, in 1937, 38, when they discovered oil in Saudi Arabia, Steve, they sent Everett de Goyer, the foremost geologist in the United States. Harold Lycka sent him there. And I got this from the prize, Dan Juergen's book. And they assessed the discovery in Saudi Arabia. And they said, sir, this is the back to Harlikas. They said, sir, this is the single greatest prize in all history, the oil in Saudi Arabia. And it was. And it changed the world. But now, when you look at that structure with a solar roof, a battery, an electric car, and you're independent, and you totally disintermediate incumbent energy, that is the new greatest prize.
It's the new
I
wheel.
Can't underline that enough. And that's a good way, I think, to finish up here today, where if that doesn't fortify why you need to be hyper-focused on electrification, if the way we create, transfer, utilize, and store electrical energy, because just like China is now 30% final energy usage, used to be 20, 10 years ago, rest of the world's 22%, you're going to see all the economies now go to 40, 50% of final energy usage as electrification. And copper, lithium, phosphate, these are the things that you want to be hyper-focused on, in my opinion. And also, I'm going to send you a copy of my book. My publisher's in Ohio, so my 2016
nice.
Hardcover, beautiful book. It's on audible.com, and it's an ebook. But you're going to get a hard copy edition. I'll get them to send it to you. Just give me your
sweet. Gianni, if you want to just mention briefly what the book's about one more time, and then if you can talk about how people can find you if they want to reach out to you.
Yeah, Twitter's going to be the best way. I'm posting, I hope, infographics and good data points that people aren't going to find everywhere. Sometimes I don't have a lot of them because I don't want to parrot what everyone's doing. But my book is basically about a young electrician who enlightens his family doctor about the magnificence of electrification. And remember, this is 10 years ago. So now it's all come true. It's no longer, people are you crazy that we're going to be electric cars 50%, all this stuff. It happened. And by the way, that's why I started Copper Bank. It's because it was my way to speculate. It was optionality with no time expiry. We bought deposits. We owned them. And people already spent $100 million before me. You know, so it was just waiting. And I always told people back then, when Copper Bank was 10 cents and 15 cents, the punishment is illiquidity. I own 10 million shares. So, I mean, for me, it was I just couldn't sell the shares. You know, we were going to lose money because we weren't diluting it. Couldn't really, the market cap was almost low. And people say, how low? I said, well, John Wayne used to say, how low was it, friend? Lower than a snake's belly in a wagon wheel rut. I mean, it was low. I was trading for nothing, you know? And so the rest came true, you know? But that the book is about that. A young electrician, his family doctor, and they go around the world looking at these themes that we talked about today. 4 hours, 4 to 5 hours, you have a read. Or you can just do it, audible.com. Listen to it when you're driving your car. And I reread it recently, about 6 months ago. And you know what? I'm just really, really proud of it. There's a lot of wisdoms and all from all of the great characters of investment. You know, Don Cox, Ben Graham, Steve Jobs. They're all, and I plug them, of course. But it's people think we'll get a lot of joy out of it.
Gianni, I enjoyed this time and learned a lot. I look forward to getting your book, reading your book, and I'd love to have you back potentially and maybe ask you some further follow-up questions regarding the book and all the other stuff that's going on. And today may be doomsday, so we'll maybe have a lot more to talk about next time as well. But thanks again, Gianni. For our listeners, I'm just Steve Yang, learning alongside you from people smarter than me, like Gianni here, Kovacevic, did I say that yes. Right? Thanks for your time, Gianni.
Thank you. And like J.P. Morgan once said, go as far as you can see. When you get there, you'll see further.
I love it. I love it. Thanks, Gianni. Bye.
Bye.